You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
The government cares about
they
you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. And hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it has to be done, it must be done, and you will get it done, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. You always handle your business, and that's why we love you. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m., all times are going to give our Eastern times, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Ataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. The Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Fridays. On Saturdays, from 4 to 6 on Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9 on Saturday. And then Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Products that are produced by us. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brothers and sisters, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Baba Bamani Tahemba is leaving Monday. He's going to Ghana. Monday, May 24th to June 5th. And then his next trip after that will be November 18th through the 29th, going to Tanzania. And then December 24th to January 5th, going to Ghana. And then April 1st to April 11th, 2022, going to Senegal and Gambia. Brothers and sisters, everything on the website at AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Everything is there, all that you need to make it a trip of a lifetime. And if you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007 for videos. For photos, go to facebook.com/Bomani.
And check it out for yourself. Africa for the Africans. Have a shot. Wait, no, let me go to Renoko. Although Renoko's my guest, so we'll talk about what he has going on. And so we're going to go right to Habesha. Habeshaincorporated.org. Habeshaincorporated.org. The mission of Habeshaincorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. And is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Africa. Habeshaincorporated.org. Check them out. And check out the Kashi Project on the continent of Africa. The buildings are up. They also have a presentation for Repatriation Initiative that will help you and assist you in a step-by-step basis to come home to the motherland. So check out HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. Ledge Group, land for the environmental development of for group economics. Land for the environmental development of group economics, the Ledge Group. When you go to their site, Ledge Group, theledgegroup.com, you see that they have a raffle, a Tanzanian safari raffle. And brothers, it's valued at $15,000. 7 days, African safari in Ashura, Tanzania. So check it out. Also, too, if you are a member of the Ledge Group in Tanzania, they have an agreement with the Tanzanian government that if you want to buy land, you can buy land at $250 an acre. You can buy land at $250 an acre. One of the brothers and sisters I knew that I would probably see at the Ibaka Tsum Tsum this past Sunday was Brother Dudiyemi, but he repatriated. That's right. He repatriated, him and his family, Evelyn and them. They repatriated to Tanzania, and I know I wish them well. Right on. It's beautiful. Of course, the Ledge Group deals with the four areas of people development, and that is food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 countries and over 170 employees and over 260 members. They need more members. Why don't you think about becoming a member of the Ledge Group? Go to theledgegroup.com and check it out. BB Toomey. ABIBITUMI.com, BBATUMI.com, BBATUMI.com. They're having their Saturday, this Saturday, and May 22nd. To Africa, we want the literary perspective, and that is at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, too, on Saturday, the seminar series, Spirit in the Room, an African-centered approach to the therapy from Isfet to Ma'at. That's also, I think that's in the morning. That's early in the morning. So, the next Saturday, the legacies and impact of the transatlantic slave trade on the African diaspora. It's a great series, brothers. Go to bbatumi.com. Believe me, it should make that your number one site to go to for shopping, news, information, events, funding, bbatumi.com. So this Saturday, I can see it's just 2 programs. Okay, well, let us continue. Let us continue. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, with healthful, delicious smoothies and health drinks and pastries and soups and all kinds of good stuff on weekends, on Saturday and Sunday. They have vegan food that you can purchase. There's things you can buy at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located right across the street from the Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna is located also on Ralph David Abernathy. Open on Fridays and Saturdays today from 1 to 7 and tomorrow from 1 to 7, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore at the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. If she doesn't have the book that you're requesting, believe me, she'll get it for you. But just go ahead and check it out. Go to the Greenbrier Mall right off of Georgia Highway 166. And right before you get to 380, right before you get to 285. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. There is light in the Black Dot. My good brother Gazimli Ajamu. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Brothers and sisters, there is light in the Black Dot. Us lifting us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10 on blogtalkradio.com. That is blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is called Dare to Win every Thursday night at 9 p.m. You can give them a call because you can go online at blogtalkradio.com, but you can also listen by giving them a call or give questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road, Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's right, Sun Goddess Scents, all kind of grooming aids for your beard and so forth, incense, t-shirts, all kind of good, beautiful black power paraphernalia at Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. And you can give our sister a call, Shelly Amonsette, at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sanjay Dash Haidi, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, the work that she's doing is phenomenal in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, working with our kids. When you go to the website, you will see what I'm saying. They deserve to be supported. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Sonjay-Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Baba Baruti and Mama Baruti, Mama Ya. At Akabin Institute, they deserve our support as well. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But, of course, you can make your cash donations through PayPal and Cash App. If you use Cash App, the dollar sign, YAH, Y-A-A, the letter M-B-A-R-U-T-I, Baruti. And, of course, many books that he has. And, of course, you can check those books out at Akabin House. That's AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com, for the fine selection of books by Baba Baruti. And, okay, where am I at now? Okay. I don't know why this always happens to me. Let me get out of here. What do I have to flip to get out of here and get back to my screen? What the hell did I do? I better hurry up and do something quick, that's for sure. Man. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. May 20th. Let me see. Let me do this right quick. Let me make these two announcements right quick. One is the Pan-African Federalist Movement's on African Liberation Day, Tuesday, May 25th, African Liberation Day from 6 p.m. to 8:30. That's New York, Washington, D.C., Florida, and Atlanta. We're holding a virtual town hall meeting, forging a common African identity, what's in a name. And that's going to be Tuesday, May 25th. That is African Liberation Day. And the link, it's a Zoom link, https://bit.ly/ the letter, the number three, the letters ELAOTD. I'll repeat that later. I'll repeat it now. Zoom link, https://bit.ly/3ELAOTD. ELAOTD. That is. And also, too, we have the Complementarity Conference Saturday, June 5th. Saturday, June 5th from 4 to 8 is $10 per adult, $5 per teen. Okay? And make sure it's you can use PayPal or Cash App. If you use PayPal, it's yabarudi@yahoo.com. PayPal, yabarudiya@yahoo.com. Include the pertinent information, complementarity conference, your name, and your email address so they can send you the link to the complementarity conference. Not this Saturday, coming up the following Saturday, Saturday, June 5th. All right. So. The Inye Sesim, May 20th. A single bracelet does not jingle. Congolese proverb. Along with the depth of our spiritual connectedness, Africans are the most family, child-centered people on the planet. We place nothing above our children except that which will bring them into existence and allow us to rear them in the way of our ancestors. This does not happen without complementarity, coupling, and commitment. Generally speaking, the two most important variables in this effort to produce and rear warriors are national sovereignty and family. However, families cannot exist as whole, sane, progressive, empowered forces capable of maintaining a sovereign reality without the complementarity coming together of men and women. And to have the responsibility of success, these individuals must have committed themselves to each other as lifelong couples, sworn to build children powerful enough to sustain their society. If we are truly nation builders, we have to be honest about ourselves, what is the best model of who we want to be that we can and should pass on to our children. But not really, because we already know the answer. Nation building begins and ends with complementarity. It can only sustain itself and create a viable future through the balanced pairing of women and men into married couples whose priority is family and children first. To do what is right for the children is to build a whole future. In this respect, those who are setting the revolutionary standard need to ask themselves if their priorities are truly being set in accordance with the will of our ancestors. As Nana John Henry Clark said, if it ain't about nation building, it ain't about nothing. Ashe. Affirm, I am part of a community that nation builds together. Affirm, I am part of a community that nation builds together. May 21st. Often, when alone and lonely, fear and doubt deepening, I call you to heart and wrap you close. Infused, your strength seeps in. Asha Aku. War is about bloodshed, and any good warrior firmly committed to the liberation of his or her people knows that death is nothing less than an opportunity to seize in the effort to remove the threat to his or her people's ability to be themselves. War is not a stage or a playground for vainglorious cowards in need of attention for unearned glory. It is not a platform upon which one makes grandiose declarations about freedom and revolution and martyrdom without operational substance. It is a place where one applies oneself toward those ideas. There is a beautiful quality of fearlessness in a mind ever rebellious against assault. Warriors do not choose to die. They choose to live. And it is because they choose to live that sometimes they must die. So warriors have faith in what you do now, here and now, right now, at this very moment. Bear no concern for what you have done or intend on doing or what has stood or may stand in your way. Know that we are winning, and that there is no room for doubt. For doubt drains. Advance. Never accept where you know. Never accept where you know or has when you what you know or has a resting place. Never stop until you have become your ancestors in all their glory, goodness, splendor, and wisdom. Advance until we have returned the African reality to power. Advance until we return the African reality to power. When confusion sets in, affirm. When confusion sets in, I call on those who know me and who are and who we are for courage and direction. Affirm. When confusion sets in, I call on those who know me and who we are for courage and direction. May 22nd. As we walk upon this path of consciousness and our centeredness, we must take a look at our integrity and character. How can one sit at the feet of a griot or a jegna, an elder, or learn from our illustrious scholar, historians, and ancestors without incorporating these fundamental principles of manhood and sisterhood? Divinity theory postulates that proportionally and characteristically, what we find with any cohort at their younger age will still be evident as they grow older. The range of these qualities goes as far as the human mind can imagine. So this theory can be said to apply whether we are discussing incarceration rates, arrogance, me-centeredness, or conservatism. To use incarceration rates as an example, if 20% of a group are locked up when they are young, then we can expect that even considering the attrition in numbers which come through deaths, around 20% of this group is still locked up for decades later. That said, progressively with each generation, the individualism of the West teaches the children to be unable to listen, even into adulthood. It removes wisdom from the social equation and has them operating solely on information and the limits of the objective self-knowing. The arrogance and the belligerence of youth becomes normalized, and this arrogance allows the dominant culture's deception to control the direction of their interests and vision. Interests and vision which sanction and protect the interests and vision of their controllers. Arrogance is incapable of setting at the feet of anyone but the more arrogant. Again, as argued within the vintage theory, qualities initiated in childhood do not change as a group ages. All one needs to do is look at history. Affirm, I know and I do are one. Affirm, I know and what I do are one. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. My guest, Baba Brinoka Rashidi, how are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How have you been? What's been happening?
Sorry, my brother. Life has been very quiet, man. Yeah. I'm sorry to say. Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, it lends itself to a lot of, you know, introspection and contemplation and strategy.
Brother, I've had all the contemplation and introspection I need for a long time, you know. It's just personally, when this pandemic hit, I'm in Southern California, and we were ordered to shelter in place. That was a big shock.
Yeah.
But over a period of time, I've adjusted to it. And so now for me, the big thing is to be able to pull myself together and enter into this new phase.
Right.
And I confess, it's a little bit of a difficult transition.
Okay. Well, and you're so used to being gone, brother. You're so used to.
I know it.
You know.
And now I'm used to not being gone.
Yeah.
And so the idea of going again is like a shock to my system. And yeah. I've been telling myself a lot lately, Renoko Rashidi, you got to pull yourself together. You can't afford to be complacent. So what am I doing? I have an assignment for one thing, to write a new introduction for my book, Black Star, The African Presence in Early Europe. That's a good thing. That book was published in 2013. And it's one of the most important books of its type that's been written. I mean, the African presence in early Europe. And then I have two tours coming up.
Right.
One with Leonard Jeffries and James Small to Ghana. That's yep. 2 months, less than 2 months.
Yeah. From now. July 18th then, through August 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then right after that, a trip to Kemet. So yep. I need to prepare myself for that. I've got a webinar next weekend.
Right.
It's a global African presence webinar. And I expect it'll be the best one I've ever done. It's in two parts. The first part is, who is the original woman and man? That's a presentation that I did nearly, 15 years ago. And it springs from the Nation of Islam. Who is the original man?
Whoa, okay.
And so I decided to update that and look at the origin and evolution of humanity in Africa and the spread of those ancient African people around the world before the slave trade. And then the second part is the rise of African civilization. And this will be an opportunity to show my very best photographs on the rise of African civilization, not just in Africa, but all over the world. And one of the components will be a definition of what we mean by civilization. Mm-hmm. For example, I think, you know, as you know, and I think many people know, that for the past several years in particular, I've really, really been active photo archiving, taking the photographs that I've collected from museums around the world, particularly before the transatlantic slave trade, and putting them in order so that other people, hopefully future generations, will be able to make use of them. There's one hole, in my opinion, in my resume in that regard, and that is Australia and the Pacific Islands. And the major reason for that is because I'm not able to find ancient pieces. Most of the artifacts that I find from there are within the last 100, 200, 300 years. What does that mean? I think that the ideas, that many of the ideas we have, even definitions of something like civilization, is based on a Western standard.
Mm-hmm.
And without us even thinking about what that means, what is civilization and how does it apply to other people? And so this one is going to be a beautiful webinar, wonderful photograph. So in a nutshell, my brother, that's what's going on with Renoko Rashidi.
That's, I tell you, brother, you always have a lot going on. And, you know, and now that you have all these Zooms, these Zoom webinars, you know, to some degree, that's kind of helped sustain you to some degree, hasn't it?
Oh, my brother. I've gotten so used to it now.
You'd be a very proficient.
That's all I really want to do. These Zoom presentations are like the highlight of my month. Any other time I can be complacent because I don't have a plane to catch, a train to catch, a lecture to prepare for. So I just do these Zoom presentations.
Yeah.
And I must say, they've gotten better and better, and they've sustained me, and I enjoy it because it gives me an opportunity to do maybe what I do best. And that is just to show these magnificent images.
Yes.
I think that Dr. Jeffries likes to say something like, he who controls the images controls the future, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the imagery is very important. Even from a young age, as a university student, I realized the importance of photographs and showing pictures. And I think that we can, in large measure, reconstruct our history through imagery, you know, alone for that matter.
Definitely. Almost definitely. And I mean, I've sat in a number of presentations that you have done over the years. We've known each other for, I don't know, about 30 years. And every
too
time.
Too long, man.
Yeah.
Much too long.
and every time I get so much out of it because they're visual, you know.
Yeah.
They're visual and they hit you. I mean, when you show the beautiful young people in the islands, you know, or even in Southeast Asia. You know, that where you think that there may not be no African presence, but there's an African presence around the globe. And you have documented this. You know, you're considered one of the top primary researchers. And there's others out there. But to me, you know, I'm impartial. You're my favorite because I know you and I know what work you've done. I know your heart. I know how committed you are to presenting this information to help transform our people, to give us the courage and the knowledge that we need to do, that we need to have to move forward, you know. And it's important.
Well, you know, one thing, my brother, and I think that we've had this conversation before, at least bits of it, is that at our age, we're elders now. How do we transmit this information? I think that you, a member of ASCAC, like to repeat frequently the expression, intergenerational transmissions of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes, to me, even more important and essential. We're, in some ways, I think we're at our height in terms of knowledge and experience and lucidity. And so I think it's very, very important that we make sure that new generations, other generations, don't have to start from scratch,
mm-hmm.
and that they're right. able to build on what we have done, just as we have been able to build on Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and Dr. Van Sertima and Asa Hilliard and Jay Rogers and William Leo Hansberry and Francis Wilson and so many others.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my thoughts these yeah. days, my brother.
Yeah. And understandable. You know, I mean, after all, we're not as, we, you know, our mobility is not as swift as it once was. But the mind, but the mind is still, you know, it's still clicking, it's still relevant, it's still working. And so you can put together presentations, you can give information in a form or in a manner that, as Malcolm would say, making it plain, you know, so you yeah. clearly understand what I'm presenting to
and
you.
And belated happy birthday to Brother Malcolm.
No, no doubt. No doubt. Yes, yeah, this past Wednesday, we...
I wonder what he would say if he could talk to us today. Would he be impressed? What do you be saying? You trifling, you know, Negro. What have y'all been doing? We told you what to do. Marcus Garvey told you what to
yeah.
do. And y'all,
yeah.
What do you say? In spite of everything, mm-hmm. you've made tremendous progress. You should be proud of yourselves. It's not enough, but yeah. you've done enough to be able to say, yeah, we didn't just sit on our laurels. And I wonder about those conversations that we would yeah. have with Malcolm Garvey and Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, et cetera, et yeah. cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Looking at today, I think just like in some other periods where there's some optimism, it looks like there's progress, and then there's some areas that are like, damn, you know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I'm looking at these cases of a police brutality. They don't seem to slow down at all in spite of, you know, the trial, the recent Chauvin trial, in spite of the spotlight that's on it. Every day I wake up and check the news, and it seems like there's another case. There was, I looked at the news this morning, and there's a case in Connecticut. Amazon apparently is building a new plant there.
Okay.
And they just found seven nooses. Or this sister, this professor, because I don't think we talk about the sisters nearly enough.
I agree.
His sister in North University of North Carolina, who was not given tenure because I guess she's the architect of this 1619 project. And so it would seem to me that when we do make discernible progress, we should never look at it and say, okay, we won, but this is just a part
right.
of an ongoing process. And that we know that whenever we score a victory or a triumph,
mm-hmm.
that there's going to be a backlash to that, and
that's
we have
right.
to fight even harder. And that's
yeah.
tough, man.
Yeah. It is.
Psychological.
It is, because you seem like you're going over it again and again. It's almost like the Groundhog Day movie, you know, round and around. But, I mean, these challenges we must make and call them for what they are and expose them and so forth. But unfortunately and sadly, they come back around again. Damn, we just fought this fight, you know? And we felt we were victorious in that battle. But yet here we are again. But see, I contend that that's what's going to happen when we're dealing in somebody else's reality. This is the Europeans' reality.
What do you mean by that? Elaborate on that.
This system was set up by Europeans. Yes, it had all these monikers of freedom and justice and equality, and you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whatever you want. all you have to do is persevere and da-da-da-da. They said all of that, but the reality is this was set up by them and for them. You know, they eliminated the indigenous people pretty much. When you consider the number of people that were on, that were in the United States when the European came here, or the number of people that was in this hemisphere, the millions of people who were in this hemisphere when the Europeans came here, and now most of them are gone, or they have been absorbed by the colonizers, by Spain and Portugal and England and France and so forth, you know. And so it was never designed for us collectively to be who and what we are. Now, individually, if you, you know, Baba Renoko, I would never argue what an individual can do if he or she puts their mind to overcoming whatever obstacles, pitfalls, or detours that are in their place. That's ludicrous. I couldn't do that. But what I argue, what happens to the majority of us, you know, because individualism is a European, Caucasian, white person's desire. I think for, therefore I am. Individualism. But collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. It is a serious need. And it's very hard for us to be collective in a system that denies that and denies who we are collectively. You see? So.
All right. Well, let me raise another point. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately as well. That there isn't even more anger demonstrated by our community against the status quo than it is. You know, basketball season, the playoffs are here, and one of my favorite athletes right now is this brother LeBron James. Yeah, I really admire him on a lot of levels. Not only
I do.
A great athlete,
I do too.
He's become quite the social activist.
Yes.
He's a family man, has a beautiful black wife, and these beautiful children. And I think about this woman on Fox News who made the comment, he ought to just shut up and dribble. It seems like most of us, tell me I'm wrong here, more or less just accept the status quo, and that there is protest against it, and we do, you know, make efforts to advance our situation. But you would think, with all of the things that is that have happened to us in this country, and the things that are happening to us, that there would be a hatred of the U.S., a widespread anger and indignation and outrage at this country that has enslaved us, nearly, you know, committed genocide against the Native Americans, not a total genocide, but in large measure. But nevertheless, there is on the part of many of us a kind of a complacency, a sense of acceptance, you know, even still a level of pride in our American, in the American part of our history.
Yeah.
What do you think about it?
Yeah. Because see, I think.
Am I just tripping?
No.
Am I out of my mind?
No, because you're seeing what the society wants to present. This struggle that we have to try to be able to fit in, to try to go along, to get along, to try to be a part and parcel of this madness, you see. And see, we are lauded for those struggles and those achievements when we overcome. Because like the other day I was looking at some things on Facebook, and they kept talking about the first to do this, and still, we're still talking about the first Negro, you know? And everything is compared to Europeans and what they have done. You know, it's not individual. It's not us. It is about comparing us to them and our struggle to be accepted and approved by them. And so.
You make a good point. I see that, you know, in international. For example, as you know, I spend a lot of time on Facebook. And I recall a few weeks ago, posting some materials on the Black St. Maurice. Now, St. Maurice, actually, I'll use a better example. This, the Black samurai in Japan, Yasuke, I guess is how you pronounce it. And, you know, we were, people were posting that he was the first samurai, first Black samurai in Japan.
Right.
And one brother said, who cares? We have the Nile Valley civilization, and we don't have to prove that these people were Black, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why should we put emphasis on Yasuke or St. Maurice in Germany, the Black patron saint? And my response was, we celebrate them and we take pride in them because in spite of all the obstacles, in spite of everything, in spite of the fact that there were few, if any, Black people around at that time, they were still able to excel. Maybe that's why, in spite of everything, I still root for Tiger Woods. Yeah. You know, I root for Serena Williams, although in my opinion, she's let me down in a big way.
Yeah.
But she's still a sister. She's still Black, and I know that the odds are against her. And so I still root for her. I want her to be successful. Anyway.
Yeah, I do too. Even though she's bleached her skin, but I do too.
I didn't know she had bleached her skin.
Yeah, yeah, man. They somebody put up a picture of her a few years ago and a more recent picture of her. And I'm like, oh, wow. And then another picture, a more recent picture. So, okay, well.
Well, look at the positions that we are forced into. You know, there's a Popeyes commercial, and they've got this sister on there, and I feel insulted every time I watch it. She says, this sandwich is so good. It's as though your mama made it and prayed on it and sent it to heaven for Jesus to save. I mean, you know, that's like embarrassing to me, man. Yeah.
I haven't seen that one,
man.
We are
still there, man.
I haven't seen almost, that.
It almost makes me want to use some very foul language.
Yeah,
or something, brother.
I know. It is.
People must be listening to this conversation and say, what did these brothers do this morning? What kind of conversation is this they're having? But we're just two elders, two Africans, two race men, trying to talk about experiences that I think a lot of people can relate to.
No doubt. No doubt. And that's what we've had the last few times. That's good. Open conversation, not any one thing particularly, but definitely talking about the things that you have going on, because I do that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I always talk about, but go to drrenoco.com.
Tell me, my brother.
Yeah.
How many years have you been doing this?
Oh, 7 years.
Seven years.
Yeah, it'll be 7 years I've been on the radio. I started in Milwaukee right before I left. And then when I got here, I'll be here 7 years in October. So,
and what has sustained you all of this time?
My contribution to helping our people understand the importance of our history, understand the importance of us coming together. You know, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I promote and state everything's about. Independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's what you're going to hear on this program. And the motto of the program is Pan-Africanism or perish. That's Dr. Mm-hmm. John Henry Clark quote. I know you know that. And unify or die. Unify or die. And because I have a deep love for Africa and a deep love for Africans. And, you know, that's why my ultimate is to move, to repatriate. Unfortunately, my grandson moved here from Milwaukee. And so he's here to take advantage of the basketball environment that they have here because he wants to be a player. And, And he's not
well,
bad.
I wish him well.
Yeah, well. You know, I'm trying to put him in a position to, at least my contention is not that, you know, that he aspires to all of those things, but that because of that, there's an avenue for him to learn and to be the best man, the best husband, the best father, the best brother in the community that he can be. I think my younger grandson, more so than my older grandson, has a pretty much a more understanding of who I am as an African, who I am as a, you know, as a grandfather, and what I expect and what I espouse, you know. So I'll be here for at least another 4 years. It's unfortunate because I'll be 73 years old, 72 years old.
Hey, but, we'll be looking forward to it, man. Yeah, that's a blessing.
Yeah.
Everybody don't get to be 73.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I hope to be in even better shape than I am right now. You know, and, and I'm not bad at all, you know. So, but, yeah, that's what sustains me, you know. And I look forward to every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time to come on this program and to talk about different things that are happening. And once again, trying to make sure that we understand what we're up against, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of us still think that somehow, some way, that this society can really be for us as well, can do right by us. You know, I think.
Do you believe that's possible?
No, I don't. I really don't. And as Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history. These folks. In the position that Europeans or Caucasians are in, they had every opportunity to right wrongs. Even to this day, they are defiant in doing what's wrong. Here you have the people in Congress, the so-called Republicans, who don't even want to back an independent investigation of what happened on June 6th. They'd rather just say, okay, forget it. You know? All the people that did that, forget it, is a bad mistake. And of course, you know, Trump didn't lie. He didn't lie. There was some misgivings about the election, and we need to develop election integrity. So we need to implement and put in place all of these hardcore restrictions of voter ID and not voting on this day or that day, all these other things. It is ridiculous, man. It's a constant slap in the face, you know. And it ain't about Republicans or Democrats either. It's about Caucasians. Because the bottom line is they do for their self-interest. It's not like, you know, in the Democratic Party, we got it so good. In fact, I may.
Well, I think that's something that we might be able to say. Well, I contradict myself. I started to say maybe that's something that's typical of Europeans themselves. The African people, I think more than any other people, have this deeply rooted concept of Ubuntu.
Yes.
Or universalism.
Yes.
Or we love the world. And sometimes I think that we implement that to our own detriment.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I think about another one of our great leaders in Pan-Africanism, Kwame Ture. And one of the things he would talk about is the period, I guess we would call it Black Reconstruction, or that period after the Civil War, or that in the South, for example, you had the opportunity, and it did develop to a small extent, I think, but it was snuffed out, the opportunity for the formerly enslaved Africans in the South to develop a coalition, a kind of a populist movement with these, for the most part, poor white people, what we would typically call poor white trash, who, you know, didn't really have much of anything themselves. But, and even now, I think you can see elements of that. But people, white folks, I guess, at least many of them, would rather use race or see themselves as a racial group opposed to the interest of African people, rather than saying it is in our best interest for us to unite for the common good against a capitalist enemy.
Right.
Another thing I'm realizing, I guess, with the passage of time, is that life and history is very nuanced and it's complex. And it's not just this or that or black or white. It's usually more complex than that.
Yeah.
Another example. You know, I was getting all this news. I guess we are fortunate to live in a time and an age we have access to so much information. Now, I think a lot of us believe, and perhaps rightfully so, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, that there's always been a bond, I grew up with this, with African Americans and Native Americans. And lately there's been a series of reports that a lot of the Native Americans, I think the so-called five tribes, civilized right. nation, I forget the term, actually enslaved a lot right. of African people.
This is true.
And that's the reason there's so much of a historical relationship, Indian blood in us, we might say, mm-hmm. to make it plain. And that's something that's, am I making sense at all?
Yeah.
Just the complexities of history and worldview and how there's a mm-hmm. tendency for us to want it to be very, very simple and cut and dry and
not
think critically.
Right. Yeah. No, you know, watching that documentary, I don't know if you had a chance to see it yet, Baba. Exterminate All the Brutes.
No, I haven't seen it. Tell me about it.
Believe me, you got to see this documentary. It's Raul Peck. Raul Peck is the brother that did the documentary for
Lumumba.
Yeah, Lumumba. Yes. And I'm Not Your Negro. Oh man, why is the brother's name escaping me, man? This is I've been going through this, Baba, tell you.
James Baldwin.
And some other documentaries he has done. And he even did one, I think, on the murder of the European Jews, extermination of European Jews. And so this documentary is his life, is what he has experienced. He is from Haiti. He was born in Haiti. And so he's gone through Papa Doc, Baby Doc, and he even hailed and thought that Aristide was going to be the individual, the person that would lead Haiti. And of course, we understand now that that didn't happen. And Haiti is sad, you know. But he lived in the Congo. He lived in the Congo. And he's seen the rise with the coup that happened to Lumumba, and then the rise of Mobutu Sese Seko in the Congo, or Zaire at the time. And he's lived in Germany. So all of these things, he's seen this personally. And then he goes to some Caucasians. One was Sven Lundquist, who wrote the book called Exterminate All the Brutes, which was a quote, I think, from somebody in Belgium, I believe, who said that, just go ahead and exterminate them. Exterminate all the brutes, you know. And another lady, Ortiz, who wrote an indigenous history of the United States, looking at the United States from the perspective of the native people, the indigenous people, you know. And then a contemporary of his, a brother who was from Haiti, you know, silencing. Oh, okay. What was that? Silencing. I have it down here somewhere. Let's see if I can pull it. His book called Silencing. But I mean, you know, I tell you, it's an outstanding documentary. Yes, yeah, Silencing.
How did you feel after you finished watching it?
Silencing.
Uplifted, depressed, angry. All of the above.
It's, you run the gamut of the emotions. His document is called Silencing the Past. His name is Marcel Rolf Torolet, I believe it's pronounced. And he died in 2012. And Sven Lundquist died in 19. And the Caucasian lady, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, an indigenous people's history of the United States. She is still with it. But you will, because at the very beginning, he goes back and forth, is that how he does it. He doesn't just do it in a chronological sense. You know, he goes mm-hmm. back and forth, and he has this Caucasian who is the antagonist. You see him at the very beginning. I can't remember the Caucasian's name. He's an actor, so because he has these dramatizations, and you see him at the very beginning going down into Florida, into Seminole territory, and he faces this leader. She's the leader, and he tells her, "I want my property back. I want my property back. He says, what do you mean your property? These are human beings, you know. But I want my property back. And if you give me my property, this is how he says it, I'll let you go to a territory that we have a place for you. If you give me my property, I'll let you go to a place where we have made for you, you know. And, of course, in the next few scenes, he shoots her. He kills her. And then they vamp on that territory and they burn it down, you know. And he's in very.
Well, apparently she did go to a place that they had set aside for.
Yeah, yeah. Help him. Help him.
You know, since you brought up the Seminoles, I think it's important, too, to be fair. So let's talk about the Seminoles for just a minute. The Seminoles, for those who may not know, lived in Florida. And I think the term basically applies to Native Americans. But there were Africans among the Seminoles. And they formed a very close bond. And that, too, is complex. But we know for a fact, and I think it should be celebrated, that these Africans and Native Americans, this coalition in Florida, fought a sustained war of liberation against the United States for 150 years.
Yeah.
So, brother, he's an ancestor now, one of the mentors, one of the major mentors of Ivan Van Sertima, Jan Carew. I remember giving a powerful lecture about it way back in the 1980s. And he mentioned that at the eve of the U.S. Civil War, that two-thirds of the United States Army and Navy was in Florida fighting these black and red people, these African and Native American people. Now, we talked about how, you know, some Native American groups, based on the historical accounts that we're able to analyze, did in fact have enslaved Africans among them. But there's also, in this case, is particularly important where African Americans and Native Americans did have that kind of bond.
Yeah.
Now, around this time, 1859 or so, as I recall the story, there was a big conference, a gathering in Aquintro. And it was because so much pressure was being brought to bear on these sisters and brothers. And I think that there were treaties, there were entreaties that were made to them if they were to surrender and lay down their weapons, that they would be given a certain amount of sovereignty and preferential treatment. One group wanted to accept that because of the pressure that was brought to bear. And I will not condemn them because I wasn't in that situation. It's easy for me to look back in the comfort of my studio mm-hmm. and say what I would have done.
Right.
But another group said, we will never lay down our weapons. Yep. As long as a single African is enslaved, we are all enslaved. And those sisters and brothers and Native Americans marched out of Florida
yep.
through Arkansas and Oklahoma and Texas, and some of them ultimately ended up in Mexico. Mm. So I think, to be fair, we need to look at the whole story. And that gets back to my original point, is that history is complex and it's nuanced, and we should not always look for simplistic answers. And also, another thing I want to point out, I notice there's a tendency for many of us, at least I see it on the part of other people, and I suppose I do it myself, and maybe we've even done it this morning, to say, Dr. Clark said this, and Chancellor Williams says that. And I don't know if what we want to do is develop a cult of personality. This is not North Korea. This is not Communist China where we're handing out the little red book. But I would rather a person say, based on this evidence, Dr. Clark said that. You know, Chancellor Williams wrote that magnificent book, or that magnificent book, Destruction of Black Civilization, was published in 1971.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
50 years ago.
We cite Sheikh Anta Diop's. His works were done in the 50s and 60s and 70s and early 80s for the most part. Yeah. Ivan Van Sertima published that book, or Random House published his book that came before Columbus, I think, in 1977. I want us to build on that and not quote them and cite them as though what they said is etched in stone, but as a part of a continuum, a kind of a process. And it's almost, in a sense, like we have become lazy psychologically or intellectually because we rely. And, you know, I understand why we do it, because we want to honor them.
Yeah.
And their work is phenomenal.
Yes.
But we have a job to do as well. It's not enough just to quote what other folk have. What are we doing? And what is our responsibility to take that further? Am I making sense?
No, you're making great sense. I understand it. And I agree. I agree.
Just an observation.
Because I know that when I do, and pretty much quote the people that I have so much admiration and love for in our history, you know, because I've embraced who I am as an African for many years, way back, you know, coming into the early part of the 80s. And I changed my name back in 92, you know. And I still wear African clothes today. It wasn't a fad. It wasn't something that was right now. As I can remember, many people were wearing African clothes, grand boobahs and dashikis and sisters with galas and so forth. It's never been a fad. It should be who we are. And so I embrace those men and women that bring that knowledge to us. And I admire and respect them.
I think that Dr. Clark might say, hey, I appreciate y'all honoring me. What y'all going to do?
Yeah.
Besides invoke my name. So I guess what we've done this morning for the most part, and I don't know where you want to go from here, but just kind of reflect and make observations about where we are collectively.
Yeah.
As individuals.
Well, I'm going to take a break.
Within that collective,
I'm going to
project where we might need to go or where we should be going.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a break. So when we come back from the break and we can formulate those thoughts and ask ask the listeners to give us a call. I see a number of people in the queue already. You know, all you got to do is hit star two times.
The viewers too.
Hit star two times and you can get in or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Cooling the Gang, Summer Madness. That's what we're about to experience here in a minute, y'all. Here in the Atlanta area, Summer Madness is going to be over 90 to 95 degrees for at least about the next, I say, 10 days, starting Sunday. So you have a break tomorrow, starting Sunday. I remember, I think it was my third or fourth year when I moved here, they had the whole summer was 90 and above every day. Okay, yeah, you can imagine. I was glad my air conditioning was working. That was a savior, believe me. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and all times are going to give at Eastern Times. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. From 8 to 9 on Mondays, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Taki Kamban. And then at 9 p.m., from 9 to 10 on Mondays, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Incobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Black Farmers Report, on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Friday. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7 o'clock on Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then once again on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I'm talking today with my good friend, dear friend, and scholar who I admire tremendously. Primary researcher. He just don't, you know, go to, he's been to, how many museums have you been to?
I've never been able to get a full estimate.
Okay.
I don't know, a couple hundred, 300, I don't know, man.
Man. But as the saying goes, you've been to all of the big ones, so to speak, Berlin, the Louvre, London.
All of them.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to Nile Valley Collection.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's a few smaller ones that I haven't been able to see. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward in many ways to, I guess, like a lot of people, to the new museum in Cairo.
Yeah.
I think the Grand Museum. They keep telling me they're going to open and then they push the date back. I also want to return to the museums of Southeast Asia, probably more. The three areas that I want to, in terms of museums, that I really want to explore, of course, Kemet. And also, I look forward to when I return, God willing, in August, inshallah, to be able to go into, for the first time, the tomb chamber of King Djoser. It's open now to the public. And this is in Saqqara.
At the Step Pyramid? The Step Pyramid?
The tomb chamber has been open, I think, for about a year now.
Oh, wow. I know when I was there, but I was there quite a while ago. It was over 10 years ago. Man, how time flies. But, yeah, you couldn't even get nowhere near.
I've been traveling to Kemet since 1991.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've known it to be open. This is at Saqqara.
Yeah.
Apparently, there Saqqara is much larger than a lot of us think, too. Apparently, there's a North Saqqara and a South Saqqara. And so another tomb that I intend to make an effort, I say this almost every year, to bribe, you know, my way into somehow or another.
And you've done that.
I'll do it again. The doctor's tomb.
Yeah.
And this is a tomb in Saqqara where you have, according to a brother that went in there and saw it, I've just seen pictures of it, everything has been removed except one relief, and this is from the 6th dynasty, and this is a circumcision scene. And so therefore they call it the doctor's tomb, where you have these young boys who have either been circumcised or waiting to be circumcised. And this is very important in the history of the African presence and the background to medical science. But I also want to go back to, as much as I want to do that, I want to go back to Southeast Asia. I want to go with a good camera this time back into the museums in one museum in particular, the National Museum in Bangkok.
Bangkok, Thailand.
And then go from there to Cambodia and Vietnam. These are some of the things I'm going to talk about in this webinar next weekend, the rise of African civilization. Because when I say African, I'm not just talking about things on the continent, but we realize that African people had planted the seeds for virtually every major civilization in the ancient world.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to document that. And I think a lot of that is, as we pointed out, in the museums.
Well, you know, I have been promoting watching the documentary Great Pyramid, K, 2019.
I know that.
And the K.
You've been very, very enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, and the letter K stands for Kemet. They made that clear in the documentary. They also made it clear to what you're saying, that these cultures were deeply influenced by Africa. In fact, some of the temples and some of the things that were made by Africans, not just the indigenous people themselves. That's why I've seen this documentary now. It's over three and a half hours long, three times. And I'm going to see it again, you know, because even though there's some that say, now I don't want to go there, I don't want to believe it, that's fine. But to me, the way they present it and how it's presented, number one, they give reverence and respect to us for doing all that we did. They make it clear, undeniable. It wasn't mulattoes. It wasn't Arab. It wasn't aliens. It wasn't Atlantis. It wasn't none of it. It was Africans. Melanated Africans in that region of Africa that did this. But of course, as you know, Baba, that the pyramids, there are more pyramids in the Sudan than there are in Kemet, and they're older. It's just that pyramid.
Why would you say they're older?
That's what I've been told, that the pyramids in the Sudan.
I don't think that's true.
You don't think that's true? Because, no. And I think that reason why is because the belief is we came from the south and using the river as a guide. And of course the river flows from south to north and moving northward. And the perfection of pyramid building was obviously done in the north than it was in the south, in the Sudan. You know,
I agree with that in some measure.
Okay.
But, and especially having been to Sudan a couple times and seen those pyramids, I would say that in almost all cases, there may be some exceptions, they are much smaller than the pyramids in Kemet, especially the ones in Giza.
Right.
And number two, they're much younger. And I think that we can say that with some confidence because a lot of those pyramids have been identified.
Okay.
You know, there are, I think, three, four pyramid fields in Sudan. One is at a place called El Kuru. There's another one. The name escapes me.
How many pyramids would be in a pyramid field, would you say?
Well, it varies.
Okay.
No two are the same. They're very different. And also, the history of Sudan has really been written about like Kemet. The Sudanese government, for the most part, has not developed a serious tourist infrastructure. I hope that that changes. And a lot of the pyramids in Sudan, perhaps all of them, have been ransacked and broken into.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the pyramids, we know the names of the people that they're associated with. For example, all the pyramids, all the leaders or the rulers of the Kushite dynasty, Nubian dynasty, Kemite dynasty 25. So we know those. And then you have the pyramids of the Kintakas, the queen mothers and the other rulers of Merowe, which is much younger than the ones in the fourth dynasty. So I think that we need to, I think that we say that maybe out of passion, that we want to acknowledge Sudan because it seems, I'll use a blunt word, less contaminated than the lower Nile Valley. But I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that most, if not all, of those pyramids in Kemet are much younger. I'm sorry,
much,
the ones
older.
In Sudan are much younger than the ones in Egypt.
Okay. Hey, let me say this. I'm always open to making sure that when I get on this microphone, I'm saying something to our people that has, you know, been verified and it's bona fide, it's factual. And sometimes that may not be the case. And of course, it is up to everyone who is listening and those who have an understanding of what we should do to research it for yourself, you know?
All right, let me pose a question for you. First of all, there's that African proverb that I think that we can both appreciate, and it's very humbling. The only fools know everything. Okay. So we're always learning. We're lifetime
right.
students.
Lifetime I know I'm. Through. I know I am. Yeah.
That's one. But the question I would pose for you, since you brought up the film, the documentary, how do you respond when people say, well, I'm tired of white people writing our history and telling our story. Why should we listen to that? How do you respond to that?
Well, I understand that, too, because I think that anything that should be done, you know, by us. But unfortunately, because of our arrested development as a people, even though we admire, I know I do, Dr. Shekinah Jop, we owe Jop, I think, a great debt of gratitude, because the idea of Kemet being African, he put forth in 1974, won the argument persuasively, you know, and the smoking gun was the melanin dosage test, you know.
But I hear a but in there somewhere.
But, but, you know, that information and us being connected.
No, what are you trying to say? Why would you use Shekinah Jop as an example?
Well, because aside from us being.
Because he married a French woman?
No, because he married a Caucasian woman? No, I mean, a lot of them cast. I mean, Kwame.
So you weren't going to use that as an example?
No.
You weren't going to say he was a great, great scholar, but his defect,
yeah,
if you want to use that, was marrying a European?
Well,
are you going to say basically that it really doesn't matter what the source is as long as the source is accurate and advances our cause as a people? That's what I mean by nuance and complexity. I keep coming back to that again and again and again because it keeps staring me in the face. And I deal with a lot of these very same issues, and I have a lot of the same emotions. I remember I had a so blessed to be able to spend quality time with Dr. John Henry Clark. And Dr. Clark was so big on books, and he was always giving out book lists and, you know, posting them in the various publications that he was a part of. And I seem to recall saying something about, well, Dr. Clark, maybe we were talking about this book, Timbuktu, The Mysterious by Felix Du Bois. And I was pointing out, well, the author is white. And for one of the few times, Dr. Clark showed visible annoyance to me. And he basically says, I'm not asking you to like the guy. I'm saying that the information, yeah, is more important than anything else.
Right on.
And that is why you pursue the information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't read Jay Rogers or Frantz Fanon or Shekinah Jop because of who they married. I read them because of what they wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But we could also say, if we really wanted to take it a step further, who they married is a reflection of their worldview.
Okay.
I mean, would, yeah, we accept, would we, you know, talk about
but
Garvey and Malcolm with the enthusiasm and the love that we have for them if they had married a non-African,
no,
woman?
Not, I would not. I'm sorry, I would not. But I would still have a profound respect and love for them, but not as I do for Garvey and Malcolm and those who understood that we need each other. That an African man must marry an African woman and vice versa. We need each other. The fact that our problem, even to this day right now, is that we don't have good community life because we don't have good family life,
mm-hmm,
you know? And so I think that's important, you know? But there was a number of, you know, of brothers who did great work who wound up marrying Amilcar Cabral, married a Caucasian. You know, Kwame Nkrumah married a Caucasian. You know, and somebody.
I don't know if we can say that about Nkrumah now. Now, he married a woman from Egypt.
Oh, that's
and
right.
So,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a Coptic Christian.
Yeah.
But if you looked at her phenotypically, she does not look like a black woman as we,
right,
you know, traditionally, expect black women to look.
Right, because she had the hair. She had the hair.
And Nkrumah's view seemed to be that he was going to unite all of Africa, the Northern Africa, Arab Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that Africa was one. And that maybe African Americans, at least Africans in America like you and I, perhaps we tend to look at race differently than a lot of people on the continent. Maybe our reality is such, our history is such, that we've been forced to be more, quote unquote, race conscious than other groups of Africans who have not had the historical experiences that we've had.
And also,
because
too,
I think some of those sisters and brothers might say, y'all are extreme.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're pan-Africanist, but that's taking it too far. But to me, it's a logical extension.
Exactly.
If Africa is the birthplace of humanity and civilization, and black women are queens, why would I want to settle for something less than royalty?
Hello.
What does that say? To me,
yeah,
who you marry is perhaps the most profound statement that you make in life.
Yeah.
Because it's a reflection of how you see the world, how you see beauty. Who is the person that's going to walk by your side?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it would be, well, anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because even what's your offspring? How will they be raised? What level of consciousness will they have coming up? You know, to me it is important. You know, and we as a people, we need each other. We do. We need all we got. That's it. We need each other. And the fact that we are so fragmented, that we are so divided, you know, it's problematic in the sense that we can't agree on nothing. And so those who manipulate us are just sitting back laughing and smiling up until the time that something gains hold, then here come the infiltrators, here come the agent provocateurs, here comes, you know, those. And they always do that because they want us at each other, as opposed to, as Minister Louis Farrakhan used to say, the hidden hand, the one that's really the marionette, you know, making all the moves, you know.
The hidden hand.
Yeah.
You know, I watch a lot of TV, my brother, and if you didn't know better, you would think it would be abnormal for a black man and a black woman to be together. If you look mm-hmm. at the television commercials.
Oh, man. God.
You rarely see black couples.
You rarely see
it. That's why when I do see it, I celebrate it, man.
Yeah.
I think that the black couple is an endangered species.
Yeah.
And when I see black men and black women together who obviously love each other
right on.
And care about each other, it gives me a thrill.
Yeah.
I mean, it sends a shiver up my spine, and I say, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, Baba Baruti is having his complementarity conference on Saturday, June 5th. You know, it's the 7th annual complementarity conference. I have been promoting it every year. And, in fact, a sister who is now living in Botswana, when she was here in the States, she drove from Memphis to Atlanta to attend the conference and married a brother from Botswana, you know. And, you know, I don't know.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yes.
Black salutes in Walimo Baruti.
Yeah. That's no doubt. That's no doubt. To push and promote African love, African family.
On every level. Doing business with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Educating each other.
Yes.
Writing our own histories. We can draw upon all these other sources.
Mm-hmm.
I got no problem with that. We go where the information is. But ultimately, only African people are qualified to write the story of African people. You know, so
mm-hmm.
I'm a race man.
Yeah, well.
And I believe that it doesn't mean hating other folk.
No, not at all.
We need a big dose of self-love right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Vitally. Vitally, I'm a cultural nationalist. I love Africans, and I love African culture, you know, because that is the foundation, is African culture, you know. What Europeans have done, they've imposed their culture on us, and we have accepted their culture as if it's our own. And what we try to do is find ways to find a comfortable corner or a comfortable niche in their reality. You know, and it to our detriment. You know, here we are. See, here we are with a continent that Marcus Garvey told us about over 100 some years ago. Why should I give up a continent for an island?
Very profound.
Yes. Why should we give up a continent for this country that has treated us the way it has? We have a continent that all we need to do. And I remember Zygmunt Brzezinski saying this. He was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. In the local newspaper, it was a national press thing, so it was probably every newspaper, that we will prevent at any cost from Africans on the continent, Africans in the diaspora, from coming together, joining forces to unify. We will prevent any unification of African people, even on the continent.
You know that that statement has been disputed.
Well, they can dispute it all they want. It was in the paper. It was in the local paper. I sat down at the firehouse and read it. Okay? I remember like it was yesterday. Because number one, I looked at Zygmunt Brzezinski. He was an evil-looking Caucasian, man. He's sinister-looking. Little beady eyes. You know, he looked like the dude on a...
we're going off the rails here, my brother.
But that's another statement
that's also been disputed a couple hundred years ago when Napoleon is supposed to have said, I'm not coming to Haiti just to put down the Haitian Revolution. I'm paraphrasing now.
Okay.
I'm coming to Haiti to suppress this uprising of black people. We will not allow this to be an example. And this is clearly a question of race.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Brzezinski's comment follows in that same vein.
Yeah.
And we could probably find many comments like that over the ages of prominent Europeans who made it clear what they were about.
Well, we have a caller that wants to get in on this conversation. 469-469. Good afternoon. How you doing, brother?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How about you all?
I'm doing well.
Brother, Brother Gronoko Rashidi. You were at the Ramses exhibit in Dallas back in 89, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
I thought so, yeah, because I remember they introduced you as a young and up and coming scholar.
that he was.
Yeah, yeah. And Tony Browder was there because I got a copy of the Browder files, and Dr. Ben was a keynote speaker as well as Van Sertima. I can't remember the person on Sunday who was a keynote speaker, but I also
everybody
saw
was there. Dr. Clark
everyone.
Was there. Asha Kwesi was there. Oh, a lot of us were there. That was a big conference, man.
Right, right. And I saw you at, there was a place on MLK in Dallas. I can't remember the name of the place, but it was in a little shopping center that had an old Forest Theater that Erykah Badu had bought. But I can't remember the name of it, but I think you were there. I'm almost sure that you were there. But anyway, good conversation that you all have. Well, how did you like San Antonio? Because I know you lived in San Antonio at one time.
Well, there's a reason I left San Antonio. That should more or less answer your question.
I was living in Houston and dated a lady. She had moved from Houston to San Antonio. I went down there a few times and I told her, sweetie, I can't come
down. San Antonio is a big spread out city. The black population is not terribly large.
Not at all.
There historically has been a lot of military bases there. So a lot of the Africans who were there tended to be a little more conservative. There is an excellent museum there. San Antonio Museum of Art is superb.
Yeah.
But the level of consciousness in San Antonio was not very high. I never fit in there. And even though I lived there for a dozen years or so, I was glad to get out of there.
Yeah, I was kind of scratching my head, figuring out, how in the world does he live in San Antonio? Because I know how it was. Also, I'll close with this. Ocean, that flyer, you did get that flyer that I shared that I had Renoco's statement on there, didn't you?
Oh,
Remember, it was a flyer that I sent you that had Renoco's statement on there. If black people, we should marry one another and deal with one another.
That's
not racism. Okay. It's just good common sense. I hope Renoco didn't mind my sharing that with you in the flyer that I sent to.
No problem, brother.
Right on.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I won't get off the phone. Let someone else get in. And like always, I appreciate the knowledge that you all bring forth.
No, man. Hey, Brother Pierce, I appreciate you for listening and always calling in, man, and sharing as well.
I'll see you next week.
Oh, yeah. I'll be in Tulsa, man. In fact, the reason why Chief Ugumawale was not on Wednesday, he was in D.C. for a hearing on the Tulsa massacre. He had the sister who's 107 years old testifying and another elder brother testifying along with himself in D.C. That's why he wasn't on. So he won't be on until I leave. I'll see you probably Thursday, hopefully Friday for sure at that march, you know, but I'll be calling you. And and then, of course, I'll have him on the program when we get back.
Okay, sounds good. Let me get off the phone and let someone else get in.
All right, brother. Peace.
Bye-bye.
All right. 414.
Brother Oshie, all right.
Hey, brother.
Thank you very much for letting me in.
Right on.
Hey, I'd like to get back on the subject. And I think Brother Renoco going around the world documenting African people, I think that we could see one big African spirit, and that spirit is kind of it almost transcends color and hairstyle or hair texture. And I was wondering, when we look at race, we have to look at spirit as the primary factor. And then all the other physical indicators as indicators of, if you want to call it, race of people or a type of people. And I just wanted to ask Brother Renoco, how important is it for us to maintain our African identity?
Well, I don't know if I agree with your first point, if I understand it correctly, that spirit is a primary indicator of race. I don't know if I agree with that. I need to think about that. Nobody's ever said anything like that, and I don't know if I fully agree with that. The second, your major question, please repeat it.
Okay. What I'm trying to make is a distinction between African culture and European culture. And I'm beginning to, what I'm seeing is that to identify African, we have to look at spirit before we look at, or in conjunction with a physical characteristic.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay, well, because what I'm seeing is I see some black people who look black, darker than me and you, and they acting all white, and I see white people. Of people that look like white, because we have black people, we call them black, that look like white people. So I'm looking at how can we distinguish who is African and who is not?
That's the problem, and that's the crux of the matter. I started to raise this with Baba Oshi, but decided it was just too broad a subject. At least I do not, and I don't know if anybody does, have a clear definition of what race is, what an African is, what a black person is. Oh, she doesn't even like me to use the word black very much. He goes with the school of thought. No, I'm being honest, and it's okay.
Thank you.
He goes
that.
With the school of thought, as I understand it,
yeah.
John Henry Clark, who said we need to talk about a land mass. We need to link ourselves to Africa by using that term. But in the 50 years or so of research I've been doing, and I don't know if anybody has done more research on it than I have, I still do not have a precise definition of African identity. Now, Dr. Clark might say that because most of us deal with the Black presence or the African experience in Africa itself, and Africans who have been taken out of Africa in Europe and the United States as the result of enslavement. I, on the other hand, more than anybody probably in history, and I'm not bragging, I'm just making an observation, probably more than anybody in history has looked at Black folk in places like India, in the Philippines, in the South Pacific. And so the question becomes, are they African? People come to me with that all the time. They're not really African. They're not really like us. But all humanity comes out of Africa.
Hello. Hello.
And so who is an African and who is not? The questions become, are all Black people African? Are all Africans Black people? Can white people, can East Asians, as we understand them, be classified as African? Or is it more accurate to say that we all have an African ancestor? And those questions haven't been effectively answered. And so you really can't give a real serious response to a question like that because we haven't defined race from our perspective. Mm-hmm. We have not defined even nationality from our perspective. We haven't defined African identity. So it can be different things to different people. And so until I think we resolve that, I don't know if we can really have a definitive discussion about the things that you're raising.
But let me ask you this. Do you see a distinction between European and African cultures? I guess simple as that.
Yeah, basically, of course. Mm-hmm. Broadly, of course. Yeah, of course. White of folks course. seem to feel a need to dominate
mm-hmm.
and be in control, a God complex,
yeah.
a sense of intense competition, survival of the fittest, might makes right, a mm-hmm. dog is a man's best friend,
mm-hmm.
child abandonment, et cetera, et cetera. Africans saying, you know, we're all the same. You know, women should have, historically, should be able to fulfill their mission in life.
Mm-hmm.
That patriarchy is not historically African.
No.
That can we all just get along? That's Africa. And Europeans can't relate to that. And that is why we have, I think, these cultural differences. Every time a Black person is shot by a white police officer, we are shocked. How could they? Why won't they treat us right? And we don't seem to be able to internalize the view that their interests are not about treating us right, that their interest is controlling us.
That's right.
And that we should not be shocked. We should not be astonished. That should be par for the course. We should understand that. But still, it hurts. And we march and we pray and we hope that they'll be nice to us. Okay. That's African.
Yeah.
And those are cultural differences I see between European cultural behavior and African cultural behavior.
And see,
Black persons say, I don't see color. I don't see race. We're just all human beings. And white people be saying, is this MF crazy?
Exactly. And that's what I think. That's why I was bringing the term spirit in, because
I'm still confused about that.
Right.
I'm still confused about that. For example, right. Can you even tell me what spirit is? What is spirit? Can you even define that?
It's a non-physical entity that is like the life force. It's like a life force.
I can work with that. I think it's important that we define these things. Like, for example, we oftentimes say Black people need to unite. Black people need to get, but what does that mean? What is Black unity? I mean, beyond the word, what does it mean in practicality? And how do we build for it and strive for it if we cannot even have a common sense of definition as to what that means?
Yeah.
Maybe this is a time where we can just deal with the basics.
Yeah, we have another caller. Let me get this other caller in.
Okay, let me just say this.
Go ahead, LaRue.
In terms of spiritual expression, even though Black people in America, that we are living a European culture, we are still expressing our European culture in an African way. And I think that that gives us an indication of what is African spirit and what is not. Mm-hmm. Your parents never know. Came up with somebody like James Brown. You see what I'm saying?
All right. Thank you for sharing that, my brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, LaRue.
Beautiful.
Okay, 919-919-365.
Black Liberation. This is Kamal Kambal. I'm calling in just to greet Baba Renoka Rashid.
Oh, well, thank you,
Baba. How are you doing?
Thank you, Baba.
I'm good. Yeah,
I'm fine. We're fine. We just wanted to give you big ups for all the work that you've done over the years, and mm-hmm. we're deeply grateful for your significant contribution to our race and our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my brother. How's your family?
We're fine, man. Everybody's good. We're magnificent, and of course, Obadale, I think you might see him when you go to Ghana.
All right.
Thank you.
Say hello to the Queen, my brother. Stay strong.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Baba. Yeah, I tell you, Baba listens to the program consistently. I appreciate that so much. And we pretty much talk real times afterwards.
Consistency is very important.
Yeah.
That's why I was asking you what has sustained you for this time. You've been in there. You've been consistent.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing.
And the campaigns have been consistent. Yeah. But I think this issue of spirituality and the role that it plays, African identity, race, who we are. I think those things would be a subject for another very good program. Maybe the next time we talk, that should be high on the agenda.
Let's do it. Because I think the last few times, I know we had picked topics out. I mean, you've been on this program at least 2 to 3 times a year, you know, kind of stretch it out, you know. But every time we talk, we always try to, in the last couple of times, we said, let's talk to each other. Let's have a conversation and then get others who are listening, who want to join us, do so. And that's what has happened. And it's been very good. In fact, one brother commented, he said, man, look like Renoka was interviewing you.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I'd rather have a conversation than do an interview. Yeah. Let's just talk.
Yeah. And so
Maybe that's the most important thing that we can do right now.
Yeah.
Let's just talk to each other.
Yeah.
Just talk.
Yep, and try to.
And you don't have to be right or wrong or have the last word, but just share, exchange, and grow and build and bond. I think if we can do that, then we can really,
Well, my contention is, as a man who loves Africa and loves Africans, and so how you present to me, you know, if it sounds like what you're saying to me is embracing that concept, I'm all ears. My heart is filled. I'm you know, soaking it up, and I'll give some back, you know. But if you're talking about voting and marching and I don't feel that because I believe in independence. I believe in self-determination. I believe in liberation. I believe in sovereignty for African people.
Can't we have both? Why can't we have all of that?
You know,
I mean, we live in this system. So why can't we manipulate, you know, our situation here to our advantage while at the same time working on sovereignty, nationalism? I'm not sure if those are mutually exclusive things.
Yeah. Well, I think that what becomes problematic in when you're in a system as oppressive as this is, it is hard to develop that mindset. It's hard to develop those models and so forth within that system, you know. And equally, it's hard to get our brothers and sisters to look at it objectively and, more importantly, to embrace it. See? Yeah. So, you know, my belief, that's like, for me personally, remember I was just saying to you, I want to get out of here. You know, I believe that's the ultimate for us as African people is to go home, is to get out of wherever we are, get the Chinese out, get the Europeans out. Get the Indians out. Get everybody out, and the Africans close ranks, pull resources, and develop the continent with all its vast resources and control them. We could feed the world. Well, there's no reason for Africa to be poor. You know this, Renoka. I ain't telling you nothing that you don't know. You've seen it firsthand. You know this. You know? but it's very difficult, man. Give me some last words, brother. We're on, because I know you're busy, man, and I always appreciate whatever bit of time that you can give me, and I do, I really do, and I'm quite sure the listeners do as well, man. Maybe you can.
It's an honor to be on your show. It's an honor to talk about African history.
Yes.
And for people to be willing to listen and partake as if you're saying something important, it truly is an honor. I think the next time we do this, I want to see if we could just do something called Back to the Basics. And we can begin to define a lot of basic issues that I think as we grow in our consciousness, we take for granted and realize and forget sometimes that people are on very, very different levels. And so the next time we talk, and hopefully it'll be soon, maybe during the early summer or something like that, we can talk about basic issues that we confront and see if we can develop a sense of definition and commonality about our worldview.
Okay. Well, let's try that.
I want to thank you for having me. Also, anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can call me at 323-803-8663 or email me at Renoco@hotmail.com. I'll go to my website, drrenoco.com.
And believe me, if you do those things, brother, particularly the email and go to his website, he will respond. He always does. May not call on the call piece, but he will.
Renoco@hotmail.com. Renoco@hotmail.com. Memorize that.
That's right.
And be in touch with the brother.
Okay,
I appreciate you, Baba Hoshi.
Always.
Have a wonderful weekend, man.
You too, dear brother. Peace to you. Brothers and sisters, Hotel. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great and wonderful weekend. Be safe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Biva Hodie. Biva Hodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend, family. Peace to you. See you on Monday. Be safe.